God's words alone be spoken. May God's words alone be heard. Amen. So, if I seem a little flaky today, or should I say a little more flaky than usual, it might be because I stayed up until midnight last night trying to charge all my electronic devices because I had no power due to that insane storm we had blow through here. You all have that storm down this way, right? Oy. But then, I was awakened at 2 in the morning by all the lights and the TV coming on, suddenly when the power was restored, which left me moving about the house, shutting everything off, and you really needed to peel me right off the ceiling when that happened. Now, given all that, as I was working on this sermon without electricity, I kept thinking, this would be an awesome time for that brightly lit, transfigured Jesus we hear about in the gospel today to not only be in my heart, but in my house. Sadly, that did not happen. Now, the past few weeks, or months really, I have felt called to preach against the bigotry, hatred, and injustice that has crawled out from under the floorboards of humanity in great numbers of late. And we must continue to be, all of us, prophetic witnesses against it, spreading the gospel message of love and inclusion. This, however, is not that sermon. Today, perhaps because of the darkness of the room in which I prayed and worked on this sermon, or perhaps because it's the last Sunday before Lent, today will be a different message. Now, I remember a business story from a long time ago about a man interviewing for a position at a prestigious company. He was nervous and young, and he did his best to present well at the interview. And after he left, the hiring CEO went to the windows of his office building and stood there to look out on the bustling world and the street below, only to see that the young man he had just interviewed was stooping down on the sidewalk. He watched as the man picked something up, looked at it, smiled, and put it in his pocket. And so he called somebody to go down and grab the young man and have him come back. And the CEO asked him, "Why is it that you were stooping in the midst of that busy sidewalk?" And embarrassed, the young man said, "I saw this bright penny and picked it up." And the CEO said, "You, young man, are hired." Now, asked later why, the CEO replied, "I wanted someone who was so unjaded that the sight of something bright that others consider worthless catches his eye. Someone who pays attention to the small things as well as the big picture." This is a bit of what the story of the Transfiguration is all about. See, the gift of that young man was that he paid attention to see the small glint of something amidst the din of the world. It wasn't about what it could bring him. I mean, truly, stop. You ever been in New York City trying to stop on a busy sidewalk and pick something up? That's a brave thing to do. I mean, you're going to get bowled over by people that are, what is it, texting while walking, which is a new infraction, I think, texting while walking or rushing to get to wherever they're going to in such a hurry. And what he picked up is of very little monetary value in terms of what it could buy for him. Still, he saw it. He stopped and he picked it up. But just as important, the CEO noticed him and then employed him to build up his company. The Transfiguration story takes us to a place where some are not quite comfortable. In fact, I know some preachers that don't like this Sunday. They don't like to preach it, and commentators that talk about that. Because it's a story, I mean, I love it, but it's a story that forces us to move beyond what we think we know, beyond the bounds of the ordinary to the extraordinary. And you see, we've forgotten in this world how to do that sometimes. See, I think a lot, many times, in fact, I hope always, folks come into church searching for something. searching for the transcendent, if they may not put it in those terms, for something outside of what they know, in order to make what they know make sense. And in the context of a single service, they may get a glimmer, or maybe nothing at all, but perhaps not all of what they hope for. And I say to them, just keep coming. Just keep coming. And what I mean by that is, keep walking through the doors, keep sitting down in a pew, and keep your heart open to wonder and questions. That's right, questions. Questions are essential to faith. I mean, how many of us, I knew I grew up in a church that didn't talk a lot about asking a lot of questions. In fact, they didn't particularly like some of the questions I was asking in Sunday school. I don't know. I've heard some other folks talk about that in their churches, and I don't know if you experienced that, but questions were not something that was generally encouraged. But questions are essential to faith. They are the key that unlocks the door of the amazing. The Jewish rabbi and theologian Abraham Heschel once said, "Our goal should be to live life in radical amazement. Get up in the morning and look at the world in a way that takes nothing for granted. Everything is phenomenal. To be spiritual is to be amazed." Live life in radical amazement. What would that be like? For us to be spiritual is to sometimes be introspective, that's true, or to be religious. But sometimes it's just about amazement. Something about Jesus or theology will always break through in a way that cannot be explained. And sometimes it is for us to just be in wonder. Sometimes, all times really, that wonder comes in the form of or an answer to a question. Because questions come out of openness, possibility, seeking what one does not already know or comprehend. Unlike Peter, who always seems to be talking and doing himself into a pickle, completely missing the point, gotta love Peter, we need to perhaps be more like Thomas, one of the most faithful of the disciples in my book, and one not afraid to ask questions or to step boldly forward into the answers, or really just into the possibility of an answer. And so I think we need to consider this gospel passage in a new way, a way that invites us in, that welcomes the wonder. You see, we're so familiar with this story. We hear it every Sunday just before Lent from each of the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. We've crammed so much meaning into it, and we've heard it deconstructed in so many ways, all valuable, or so I hope. But perhaps this is a story that this year we should just let it be. By that I mean perhaps we need to hear it a bit differently so that we can let it go and hear it fresh. Like the way the renowned priest and prolific author Barbara Brown Taylor tells it. Now if you want, you can close your eyes or just get yourself in a nice listening space. And this is the way she tells it. It starts with a long climb up a windy mountain path in the fading light of day, hunting for a strong place to pray. No talking for once. No wall of words between you and the others. Just breathing for once. Just hearing them breathe. Until you can't tell whether you're breathing or being breathed. Are you hyperventilating? Sit down. You are here to pray, so get on with it. Pray until you are weighed down with sleep. Pray until it is dark enough to see light through your eyelids where light should not be. You don't really want to open your eyes to see where the light is coming from, but you kind of do, but you don't. Then you look. And there he is, someone you thought you knew really well, standing there pulsing with light, leaking everywhere, face like a flame, clothes dazzling white. Then, as if that were not enough, two other people are there with him, all of them standing in that same bright light. Who are they? can't be. Moses? Elijah? Dead men come back to life? God's own glory lighting up the night? Now they're leaving. Now Peter's saying something. Peter's always saying something. Tents, he's saying. We need tents. He thinks we're on Sinai. Someone tell him we're not on Sinai. Now there's a cloud coming in fast. There's way more than weather. A terrifying cloud that is also alive, cutting Peter off, covering everything up. Smells like a lightning strike. Can't see a thing. Then a voice from the cloud lifts the hairs on the back of your neck. Fear, so fast and primitive, you're bristling like a dog. What's the voice saying? Not listen to me, but listen to him, the Son, the Beloved. But listen to what? He's not saying anything. He's shining. Or at least he was. Now he's not. Now it's over. Now what? Now what? Now we come off the mountain and we walk. We walk into Lent. We walk with our questions as we walk with the answers, the ones we don't see, the ones yet to be revealed. And that's why Lent, which begins this week on Ash Wednesday, is so very powerful. It's a time of questioning, searching, returning, and experiencing. A time to pay attention to the small things, the pennies amidst the din of life. A time to let wonder and amazement happen, or really, to see the wonder and amazing thing that is right there in front of us happening all the time. Because if we ever hope to continue the work we're called to do, to stand and proclaim the good news that everyone is a beloved child of God, to speak out against any person or institution who would harm our brothers and sisters, to fight against oppression, poverty, and the ism of the day and moment, we must pause for a moment, turn off the constant barrage of news, and regain our sense of wonder, our faith of radical amazement, that we might see what's shining right in front of us in the midst of the noisy world. Because the wonder of the Christian experience is ours to see and to feel. We just need to be open to it, but not always search for it. To ask questions, but not need answers. To sometimes just say, I don't know. At least not yet. To see the transfigured, the transcendent that is right in front of us every day. The Christ in ourselves and in the world. To live life in radical amazement. That, my friends, is why we get to transfigure Jesus now. Just as we turn with Jesus toward Jerusalem in Lent. It's the moment we grab off the mountain and take with us, the shining glint of hope we pick up amidst the din, the gift of wonder we carry in our hearts as we strip away the trappings of the church and life that distract us. It's a time we allow ourselves to simply be rather than do, to listen rather than speak, to question, yes, to question, because we just might be in awe of what we find. And when we see what others fail to see, it's then that we're most able to be put to use, building up something far more important than a company. Amen.